Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to Pro Wrestling Flashback. I am Sinbad, and of course we have Couture. What's going on, Couture?
Not much, man. What's going on?
Not too much. One thing I must say, though, is we are still proud members of the Super Friends Universe. So go to superfriendsuniverse.com/PWF. And today's a pretty cool show. We are still waiting for him to call in, but we have a very special guest, actually. Go ahead and tell everybody who our guest is for today.
Our guest is Dave Sullivan, also known as Evad Sullivan, also known as the Equalizer from WCW from 1994 and 1995.
Yes, which is really cool. I believe we could probably call him his shoot name once he calls in. I believe it's Bill Dannenhauer. At least that's how I would. I've been. A buddy of mine actually loaned me his WrestleMania box set, and the past couple of days I've watched WrestleMania 6, 7, and 8, and it's been a pretty good time. Like it's so weird, like how 1 year someone is so big and like such a big deal. And the next year, they're absolutely nothing. I mean, it's depressing almost. You know what I mean? Like, just how Sergeant Slaughter from WrestleMania 7 to WrestleMania 8 is...
Yeah, he's in a goofman, he's in a goofball 8-man with the Family Feud guy.
Yes, with Ray Combs, which is, you know, really, really good stuff. Oh, boy. All right.
I have all those... I felt like the Legacy set when they came out on tape, because still got all, it's like WrestleMania 1 through 12, and it still got all the original music and everything. It's just like the original pay-per-view broadcast on videotape.
Oh, see, the whole, my friend Jerry had that too. He bought that like way back when it happened. But like, the cool thing about this is, the not-so-cool thing, is like Dusty Rhodes comes up to this goofy music. And and the Boss Man comes out to the music, and you could totally tell it's not like, you know, that's not what the fans are hearing, because it's just like 1999 music, 98 music, you know, and it's just really, really awful. Really, really awful.
Yeah, I thought it was weird they couldn't come out to that music. I mean, WWF is the one that created it, right?
I think so. You know, you never really know with those types of situations, you know, so...
Music royalties have killed professional wrestling, music-wise.
It's really a horrible, horrible thing. It actually really bums me out, kind of.
Yeah, they'll bust out a new song, like a mainstream song every once in a while, but they only use it once. And, you know, just have to pay money for it and stuff like that.
Didn't they cut off, like, a few years ago, didn't they cut off the Kid Rock performance, right?
I don't know. I never got that DVD, so not sure.
Oh, I know that he performed, and I believe I heard that, you know, he just didn't, was on the DVD. All right.
Yeah, I don't usually get those. Go ahead.
No, we actually have a caller on the line, so I actually think this is... This might be him. Okay, let me go ahead and... All right.
Bill Dannenhauer.
Is this you, Bill?
Yes, it is.
Hi. All right, everybody. This is the one and only Dave Sullivan, or the Equalizer. What would you prefer that we call you?
It don't matter. Just don't call me later. Call me any names. I'm good. Either one's okay.
All right, great. First off, I just want to say we are very happy to have you on the show. We've been talking about it nonstop for the past week, Cotrera and I have, because you know you were in WCW at such an interesting time, so it's it's really great to have you on here. All right, go ahead, Cotrera.
Yeah, first question would be, were you a fan of wrestling growing up?
Yeah, say it again one more time.
Were you a wrestling fan when you were growing up?
Not that much. I was really into sports myself. I did a lot of football and wrestling and track growing up, and I watched a little bit of it once in a while, but it wasn't a big thing to me at that time when I was young growing up. No.
How did you end up getting into the business?
Well, I when I got done trying to play in the NFL and stuff, the USFL went defunct. I came back and got my master's and was coaching out at UNO, and then met Harley Race when I was down at Warsburg coaching, and he kind of suggested it, and I was still a young coach at that time, so I went down to Kansas City and started working with him, and then went up to Portland with Lynn Denton, and then I just started up in the Portland wrestling up there, then went from there to the WCW, so just kind of evolved from there when I was out coaching and recruiting.
All right. Did you enjoy your time in the Pacific Northwest? And what are your memories of teaming up with the Grappler?
Well, that was probably the most enjoyable time. It was a fun organization. You know, it was pretty much in Portland and then up Washington also, so it was a lot of fun. And the Grappler and I were still very good friends today, and we had a lot of fun doing that. And that was a good time of my life. I enjoyed being up there in Portland and hitting those town shows, and had a lot of fun, learned the business, and it was an enjoyable time.
About how long were you up there?
I think about a year and a half. I think I was up there about a year and a half, 2 years with the Grapp.
How did you end up in WCW?
When I got done with Grapp, I went over to Europe, and I was wrestling Puerto Rico and Europe and all those places, and then Japan, and got to know a few of the British guys, and then Steve Regal got a shot in the WCW. And then Barry Windham got hurt, and when Barry Windham got hurt, they called me up, and I was in Puerto Rico at the time when they called me and wanted to know if I would come in there and do a shot, and I did it, and then I got hired. So it was kind of one of those type of situations. You'd be in the right place at the right time.
Who was in charge when you got there, and what was your first impression of them?
I think Dusty was in charge. It was the booker at that time when I got hired. Greg Gagne Graham. Yeah, they were in charge with Dusty. I thought it was pretty good at that time. I thought we had a lot of fun there, and it was quite interesting when those guys were in charge. We had a lot of fun. They took good care of me. I can't say nothing bad about them.
Now, when you came in, you first did. I guess your first big appearance was with Rick Rude as his tag team partner. At the Clash of the Champions, and you went up against Dustin Rhodes and Road Warrior Hawk. And,
That's true.
Yeah. And it seemed like right after that you kind of settled into the because this was a pretty big feud with Dustin and Rick Rude. Seems like you settled into the middle of the lower card. Was there ever a reason for that, or they just wanted you in the big tag match?
I think they just wanted, when they first bumped me in, they wanted me the big tag match, and then from there they kind of moved me around in different spots until Kevin came in, and I started to get with Kevin. So, I was never in the meetings. I never had a lot to do with that. That was a lot of their decisions, and I just rolled with the punches and kept going.
In the meantime, you were teaming up with Paul Orndorff at least a couple of times that I remember.
Yep.
What were your thoughts with Paul, and, how'd you like teaming with him?
Oh, it was a lot of fun. Paul was a good man. We traveled up and down the roads quite a bit, and Harley also raced, and, I enjoyed those. Those are good people. Good people to work with, good people to travel with. We had a lot of interesting times, and I enjoyed my time with those guys.
Now, who came up with making you Kevin Sullivan's dyslexic brother, and what did you think of that gimmick?
Oh, it was a little bit different, but it was fun because, it kind of put us in a fun tag team. Got to also work with Mankind, at that time, he was Cactus Jack. So, it's show business. It's kind of funny. Here I am with all these degrees and stuff and a college graduate. And I play, matter of fact, a cactus and I, we used to sit there and laugh. You know, here we had all this education, and he talked to his hand, and I talked to a rabbit. We thought that was always hilarious.
Now, is it true that you were the original inspiration for Eugene and WWE?
That's from what I understand, yeah. Yeah, yeah. They used my gimmick, because a lot of the things he did, I was doing when I was in the WCW as the EVAD. So, yeah,
so,
I think they used
it. Sorry.
Go ahead. No, you're fine. No, I think they come up with that idea through me, yeah. And I heard that also.
All right, so you have this gimmick of being Kevin Sullivan's dyslexic brother. Like, how exactly did they tell you or go about telling you that this was going to be your character? And, you know, how did you get along with Kevin when he came in?
Kevin and I are still friends today. Kevin's quite a character and a good guy, and he's just a little different, but shoot, that's everybody's a little bit different. And I got along great with Kevin. I still talk to him once in a while, every once in a while, because he's down there in the Keys running the Froggies and enjoying his time down there with his wife and everything. So, I mean, I tell you what, he and Mike Graham pulled me aside and talked to me about this idea. And I said, shoot, if it's going to be a good gig, let's run with it and see what happens. So I just went ahead and went with it, and Kevin and I, you know, then Kevin and I started traveling up and down the road and doing a show biz and all that stuff. So, you know, it's interesting how things work, and you just don't know, and you just give it a roll and go from there.
Is it, can it be kind of fun doing a gimmick like that? Because I can imagine let you let loose a little and just kind of be a little bit goofy than you would be normally.
You got to think real hard, because you got to come up with some real goofy shit to do that stuff. You know, you really do. I used to say my name's backwards and Kevin's name, and you had to work harder at that than you did the other stuff, because you really had to come up with some goofy stuff to get that dang thing over.
When you were doing your promos, sometimes it almost seemed like you were trying to make people laugh, like even the people with you, like the goofy nature that you were doing them. And I always wanted to know, were you doing that on purpose? Were you trying to make the other guys laugh?
Oh yeah, I was trying to catch them. That was the hardest thing, was coming up with sayings and mixing things up so they would sit there and go, what the hell? They start to lose it. Yeah, I enjoyed getting them out of their routine a little bit and having fun with it. But yeah, you did. You had to really work. You had to work harder at that than you did anything else I ever did, just because you had to really think of some weird stuff and how to take sayings or different things and kind of really jumble them up and say them backwards so you get that pop.
Now, you suffered a knee injury in the spring of '94, I think. Was that real, or was it just done to get Cactus Jack in the team with Kevin?
No, it really happened. We were in a tag team, Kevin and I, and we were doing a spot, and somebody rolled up the back of my knee, and the quadricep tendon popped. The Nasty Boys never did anything. It happened in a show, and it popped. Boy, I went down like a ton of bricks, and had to roll out of it. Kevin finished the match. They got me to the hospital, and they got me back to Atlanta, and I had surgery on it. I had the quadricep tendon repaired in my left knee. So, no, it was real.
How long was the recovery with that?
About four, anytime a tendon injury like that, you're out about 4 to 6 months. So that's why I had to walk around the cast and did a lot of that other stuff while I was doing that, while I was still getting it back and recovering it and going through all my rehab and everything that you had to do there in Atlanta.
Yeah, I remember there was a specific match. It was the Broad Street Bully match with Cactus and Kevin Sullivan against the Nasty Boys. It was at Slamboree 1994. What are your memories of that match?
Yeah. In Philadelphia, right? Oh, that was quite a match. You know, I'm out there with my crutches. That was a fun match. It really was. That was an exciting, fun time, and it was a packed house there in Philadelphia at that time. And then we had, what's his name in there, as a referee, I can't remember the hockey player that was known for all his fights and everything. We got him involved with it. That was a fun show. I enjoyed that a lot. You know, Cactus really has a good mind for the ring. He really does, and how to really get those spots over and get the fans involved. He did a great job. We got that all set up. The Nasty Boys, it went real well.
Now, what was the feeling backstage when Hogan was announced as coming in?
What's that now? Say that again. I didn't quite get your question there. I'm sorry.
What was the feeling backstage when Hogan was announced as coming to the company?
I think people were excited a little bit, but I don't think people really knew what an egomaniac he was. You know? I think people found out, you know, Hogan is all about Hogan, and, boy, nobody gets in his way or he's gonna, you know, get you out of there. I mean, he is all about Hulk. And at that, and at that time, he was spending all the money too. I mean, that's what broke the damn thing and why they sold it. Was when, you know, the place was doing pretty good and not, you know, I mean, we weren't quite the WWE, but WWF at that time, but we were pretty damn close. I think we had a better style than they did, because I think it was a lot more wrestling. But, you know, when he came in, they started giving just crazy contracts to all these WWF people, and we were making that kind of money to do that, and he just ran it into the ground. And it was all about Hollywood Hogan, all about him. He's all, and look at him, he's still trying to do that same stuff in that TNA, and he's going to break that company too. You wait and see.
I mean, he had one of those. He had just like a ridiculous contract. It had like a very high percentage of the pay per view cuts and stuff like that. I mean,
it was terrible. Now his wife took all his money, didn't she?
Yeah.
Isn't that why he's working TNA? I know that's why Ric Flair's working, because his fifth wife took all his money too.
Yeah, and Hogan's got the other lawsuit from the car crash. When his son was in the car crash.
His son, yeah. His wife got him, and then he got the kid too. Yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, I mean, and they're gonna probably wreck that company, because I thought the TNA was doing pretty well. Then also, him and Flair show up. Well, hell. Gosh damn, they're 60 years old. Who wants to watch 60-year-old man? I might as well come back. I mean, it gets to a point where it's ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? Me and Harley Race and Paul Orndorff, we all should come back. You know what I mean? Wrestling's like football and all the other sports. They're young men's sports. You know, you need to let the young people get in there. You know, that's what the game's all about.
Exactly.
At least that's my feeling.
Yeah.
All right, so Hogan comes in. What did you think when you were told that you were going to be his like protege of sorts?
Well, I thought it might be good, but I didn't realize he'd dump on me like he did when it got over, because it got over pretty good. I don't know if you guys know all that.
Yeah.
But it got over real well. And then when it got over real well, Hogan felt threatened, so he started running me into the ground.
Yeah, it seems like he'd bring in these guys, you know, he'd have like somebody like you, or, you know, maybe like the Renegade, like, you know, he brought in the following year, and they'd be like in the mix with him, but then all of a sudden it's like he's done with you, and you know you're back at the bottom doing nothing.
Yeah, I mean, and it got over, and then all of a sudden when it got too over, when he felt it was too high because nobody could touch Hogan, he'd run you right and you're right down the bottom. You know what I'm saying? He just shit can you and just shit on you.
So,
and, you know, because
so
Hogan has to be the guy.
Yeah. Yes, of course. So I take it that you did not enjoy working with him. Or was there like a point in time, like at first, that he was okay? Or
yeah,
was he always
I never knew he was going to shit on people like he did. But he sure did. And then once you did, you just felt like, you piece of shit. Why did you even take me in that?
Could you kind of see how things were going to go when you came in and you started seeing like your honky-tonk mans and Hacksaw Duggins popping up and like he's bringing his own crew in?
Yeah, I know it. Yeah, I know. It really, we weren't the WCW. We were just the old timers, the WWE. And then they just started losing money because they had too many of those big contracts out, and they just killed them. And so they just sold it. And then when Vince took over, he ran them people off, all of them. Just Vince builds people up, and then, you know, he moves them along when they're done. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't retread them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very, very.
That's why
true.
Let's be honest. That's why he does so well.
No, it's exactly why. That's really exactly why. WCW. Go ahead.
No, you're doing fine. You can all talk up. I'm didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. You're the guest, of course. But what I was saying is, the mistakes that WCW made with trying to recycle the talent is the same thing that TNA is doing. And like you said before, the guys that are 60 years old that are trying to wrestle still, you know, it is a young guy's sport. So you're absolutely right.
I mean, you got all them old fuckers. Excuse my language. I'm already on. You got all those old guys. They're crawling down the damn ring. They can't even walk into the damn ropes right, and they're wrestling. And you don't think that's gonna run the TNA in the ground? They had a nice product bringing young guys along, and people were watching it. Who in the heck wants to watch Hogan wrestle anymore? He can't even walk right.
Yeah. I just remember the epitome of all the old guys in TNA was they were doing an angle where Flair was in a wheelchair, and Hogan comes out to wheel him to the back, and I said, Hulk Hogan's pushing Ric Flair in a wheelchair in 2010. I said, this
is... You know, you know, they're going to be out walking in walkers and wrestling, taking bumps off a walker. You know, it's just looking like, guys, it's, you know, it's time to move on. And now, and because of it, they're going to kill that TNA because they had a nice product, but it's going to hurt the product because people don't want to watch that anymore.
Yeah.
You'd mentioned Ric Flair before, so I actually have two questions. One of them is Ric Flair had just come back, like, pretty recently to when you started, within 5 or 6 months. So what was your opinion of Ric Flair? And then also my second question is actually completely unrelated, but I thought I'd just get it out while I could. Too Cold Scorpio got fired, like, right around this time as well. No one really knows what happened with that.
I swear to you, okay, on Flair, I think he's a beauty, too. I mean, there's, he's not quite as bad as Hogan, but he thinks he's pretty, he thinks he's pretty good, too. But here's the thing is, he's got married so many damn times and divorced, they took him for so much, he's so damn broke, he has to wrestle still. And he owes the government, just like the old boxer still does. I mean, he's indebted to the government for taxes for terrible. I mean, some bitch, he's going to be paying, he'll pay his family all half his taxes. His kids or whoever gets his rights when he dies. You know what I'm saying? Because all his wives have taken him for everything else.
Yeah,
but yeah, he's an ego too. But too cold, I don't have a clue. I thought he was doing really well. I mean, I really liked those. El Scorp, and I mean, I thought he was going along well. Him and Bagwell were a nice tag team, and then all of a sudden, he's gone. And it's just like, and I never knew why or how come, or I mean, and nobody ever talked about it. I never knew. I mean, it was just weird. So I mean, heck, I don't have a clue why, and I don't even know why, because I thought he was getting over and doing real well, and the fans were getting with him. And he was a good young talent. For the life of me, I couldn't tell you what happened and why he wasn't there, buddy. I don't have a clue. He was there, and then all of a sudden he was gone.
Going back to Flair real quick, I was always kind of surprised that he left Vince because I thought he had a pretty good thing there, working behind the scenes. I mean, it was a comfortable job. I mean, he really didn't have to worry about anything because, who he was in with Triple H and all those people. And I never really understood why he left in the first place when he had some job security there.
Why did he leave? Did Vince throw him out?
No. Well, I think what it was is because this was coming right off his retirement, and he was getting all these calls, to go to the autograph sessions and do signings and stuff. And this is Ric Flair, who probably draw pretty well, and so he ended up leaving because Vince didn't want him to do that kind of stuff. So he ended up leaving and
again, that's ego.
Yeah. And I don't think it really worked out money-wise for him, not as much as he could have done with WWE. And then he ended up in TNA, which I don't know why he went there in the first place. So.
Yeah, because he's just going to bankrupt that damn poor company.
Yeah.
All right, so before Hulk came in, was there a lot of politics going on in WCW? Was it really run by that?
Oh, I think so. I mean, everybody had their ideas, but Dusty pretty much kind of, him and Mike Graham and Danya pretty much, ran the show. Flair's a politician. He thinks he's governor of the WCW. And I think he was probably the most offended when Hulk came in because then he lost his job, basically, as being the head of state. But they controlled Rick a lot and did different things to keep him, So it was open and trying to bring new talent in too. But Rick was, if you had anybody had the issue, it was Rick because he always had to be the guy. He's a lot like Hogan. He always had to be the guy.
What did you think of Dusty Rhodes when you were working for him?
I got a long fight with Dusty. I wish I could get a crowd up like it. That guy could get out and slur his words and get a crowd coming crazy. But I mean, I heard bad things about Dusty, but he never treated me badly, and he was always fair to me, and I always got along fine with him. I never noticed he had an ego or anything. I mean, he pushed his son, but hell, who doesn't? You know what I'm saying? You can't fault him for that.
And Dusty was talented. He was really talented, well, I thought, anyway. So.
What's that now? Say that again. I'm sorry.
I said Dustin was talented, too. I mean, he was really talented, I thought.
I like Dustin a lot, too. He's a good guy. I mean, I enjoyed working with him, and I thought he had a lot of talent, too. So, I mean, I think that's where a lot of the problem went with Dusty, was him and Flair. I don't think they always saw eye to eye how things should have been run.
You had mentioned Flair was upset with the Hogan coming in, but the number one babyface at the time, I believe, was Sting. And
right.
How did he react to all that? Because, I mean, he really took a backseat, it seemed like.
Yeah, I think, but you know what? The Stinger, Steve is a class act and a good guy. And you never, ever saw him in any way look like he was bothered. I'm sure it did a little bit, but you never saw it. You never saw it. I think the world of Steve Borden. I do. I think he's a good man and he's a good guy and he's honest. Traveling with him, he's a good person. He's one of the best. And he never showed it. You never, ever saw that. And you're right. It did. When Hogan came in, it put him number two. It said number one babyface. And you know what? You never would have known that. He handled it very well. So
now,
I think I always took my hat off. Because if anybody was, because the contract he got made Sting look poor. You know what I'm saying? The contract Hogan got made Sting's poor contract look poor. But you know what? You never would have saw it. You never saw it in Sting. He was always a class act.
Now, whose idea was it to give you a pet rabbit?
Oh, that was Kevin.
Kevin?
That was Kevin. Kevin always come up with some crazy stuff. I think he wanted to eat it one match or something, maybe. I don't know. You never know about Kevin or sacrifice it, you know. You know how crazy the old devil is. So, that was his idea, yeah. One thing about Kevin, he could always come up with some crazy stuff. That guy,
I was always shocked that Ralph the Rabbit seemed to be very well behaved. Anytime you'd open that thing up, he'd jump right in there. So
I know.
Kind of a hassle to take care of him.
Oh, it was a pain in the ass. But the rabbit was a good little rabbit. It was a pain in the butt taking care of that thing. You're dang right it was. It wasn't like a dog, you know. Yeah, it was a pain.
One other little wacky thing while we were talking about Hogan, you know, you had the magic slippers, which were the boots supposedly that, I mean, you don't know. I mean, I was pretty young when all this happened, but I mean, I loved it. I ate it up because, you know, WCW was the company that I loved. And so you had
too bad it went under.
Yeah, these slippers that, they weren't the real boots, were they? And
I don't know. He said they were a pair of his wrestling boots. I don't know if they're the ones that he wore when he slammed the Giant in that 2000 match with Andre there back in Pontiac Silverdome. I don't know. But he swore they were. But how do you know? I mean, he had probably so many pairs of them damn yellow boots.
Yeah. It kind of looked like, I don't know if you've seen Abyss and TNT. Have you watched him at all?
Who?
Abyss.
In the TNT?
TNA.
Yeah, TNA. Yeah, I like him. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think they were grooming some good young talent, and then all of a sudden Hogan and Flair show up, and it's the same old shit. Go back and look at the past. It's still the same stuff. Those two guys need to go do a retirement home and wrestle there and do shows for the old people.
Well, I was saying that because they kind of, it seemed like Hogan was making him kind of like what he did with you. You know, he gave him his Hall of Fame ring, called it the Magic Ring, to give him magical powers, and he had him coming out to American Made. It just kind of seemed kind of similar to what he had did with you, like all those years earlier.
And the guy was doing fine on his own before. He didn't need that. No, watch, he'll run the poor guy off before he's, and Bischoff's a jerk too. Bischoff would look you in the feet, he'd look you in the face and lie when you're walking away at you.
Speaking of, you work at PDP.
Who?
You work at PDP, who was Bischoff's boy. How did you work with PDP?
Oh, I tell you, talk about a guy that worked his way in there through the company. He's a piece of work too.
Yeah?
They're both pieces of work, yeah. Yeah. Whatever happened to Dallas anyway?
He put out a yoga book.
Huh?
He put out a book about yoga.
Oh, geez, that guy is so full of shit, isn't he?
No, he. I remember. At least I've heard this before through a few guys that had worked for WCW. That DDP would always want to put together his matches piece by piece before you even went out there. Like 100%.
Oh, God, yeah. 100%. He couldn't go out and work through a match by himself on his own. You got to walk through everything, talk to him. Hell, you worked it over 900 times, and when you get out there, he'd do it again. Yeah, oh, fuck.
How frustrating is that to have a guy?
Oh.
No.
I mean, shit, most of the guys you go out work out, you talk about a couple spots, and you just go out and you work, and you call it in the ring. Oh, I know it. Shit, improvision is gone.
Yeah.
Because if you go any way off his target, it totally screws him up.
Well, every clown has
he's not a natural athlete. I don't think athletic. I think he was a fucking bartender.
Yeah.
Most wrestlers were either basketball players, some of them have an athletic prowess. You know what I'm saying? He had none. He was a non-athlete being a pro wrestler. You know what I'm saying? Hogan never was an athlete. He was a damn singer in the band or bass player. What the hell's that?
Well, we did get to see Hogan play the bass on a WWF thing wearing a sleeveless tuxedo. So that was
I know. Well, next you'll have Mick Jagger coming back for a tag fucking team, you know?
Oh, boy. But, yeah, like I was saying about the DDP thing, every cloud has a silver lining because at least Kimberly was really attractive at the time. And you got to work with her as well.
Yeah, she was a sweetie. Yeah, she was a heck of a gal. Whatever. I heard they got divorced.
Yeah. She wised up.
What's that?
She wised up.
Did she?
Yeah, she wised up.
Yeah. What's she doing now?
I think he's doing some acting. That's about the last I heard from her. She was in she had like a little part in, I think it was the 40-year-old virgin, which is a comedy or something like that.
She lives out in California?
I think so.
Yes. Yeah, she was the only nude scene in the 40-year-old virgin. I remember that.
She was the nude scene?
Yeah, slightly.
Okay. If she's the ex-stripper, she should know how to do that.
That's right.
No, she's a good gal. I guess she's. But Paige, he not do anything? He's doing yoga?
Yeah, he put out a book called Yoga for Regular Guys, and he's been marketing that.
Is he living in California, too?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. All right. He's a beauty.
I had heard a while ago that I think he was living with Stone Cold in California. Like, I thought they were roommates. He's trying to get a show on, like, Oprah Winfrey is starting her own network. And she was asking people to suggest or to make videos and have people support them to have their own television program. And DDP was one of the people that, like, you know, made a video, and he's telling everybody, hey, support me so I can have my own show on the Oprah Winfrey Network. It's DDP. I don't know.
That's him. He's a beauty. Oh, wow.
Now, you ended up, I guess, in late 95 getting released. Why did you get released?
Never know. Never knew. Again, I think Hogan had something to do with it. Never was told why. What's that?
So was it out of nowhere?
Yeah. It just happened. Never, they didn't even tell me in my face. They sent it to my house.
The famous FedEx.
What's that, buddy?
So was it the famous FedEx?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Hearing things like that, it really breaks everybody's heart just hearing something like that. There's no class at all to doing something
no.
like that.
No. Nope, not at all.
You worked a couple of matches with Chris Benoit, and
yeah.
I've actually seen one recently. I actually found it on YouTube. What were your memories of Chris Benoit, and you know,
they
the
were
whole,
good.
The whole incident after?
Well, I mean, I knew Chris back when we were overseas wrestling in Europe and also in Japan, and Chris and I were good friends. I mean, I got along with him great. And I saw when he was on a card here in Omaha, I got down and introduced him to my boys, took my boys down there and introduced him to him. And he seemed real fine. I mean, just like Chris, same old Chris, quiet, easy going, asking how we're just talking about stuff. He seemed like he was doing real well. You know, that just blew my mind. I mean, when we were doing our stuff with Chris, he was starting to do that stuff with Nancy, Kevin's wife at that time. And then, man, when I left the company, and then 2 months later, I heard he was having an affair with her. And I was like, oh, wow, then they ended up getting married, and you know, and then from then on. But, I mean, it seemed fine. I mean, it blew my mind when I saw that. When I saw that hit the news, I called Finley, because Finley and I are still good friends, and I just said, what the heck happened? And it blew his mind. Because we were all in Europe together with him, myself, Finley, Owen Hart. We were all there together in Japan. I mean, it was just, that was sad. I really felt terrible for everybody. Holy cow. It was a shock.
Speaking of Owen, what were your thoughts that, you know, that
got along great
day,
with him. Oh, that was down in Kansas City. That's when I was back up here in Omaha, but I didn't see that happen, but I heard about it right away, and I just thought, oh, my God. Oh, roll of Owen. Owen's a good man. That's sad. It's just sad. You know, a lot of the guys I've been up and down the road with have passed away. It's just really sad.
Yeah, I was actually watching that show, and I was just
when he fell out.
I was watching that pay-per-view.
It must have been like a blur, because it had fall from that distance. It had to just be like something just dropped from the sea, just out of the sky, you know, and just then you realize what happened. You know what I'm saying? It just had to be a freakish deal.
Yeah, and I was just sitting there watching that. You know, when you watch wrestling, you don't know when somebody's trying to tell you the truth and, you know, giving you bullshit. But, you know, I could see the look on Jim Ross's face. He wasn't fucking around if something bad had happened.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, that was not, dropping from the sky like that's not a planned thing. Us people, we're not meant to fly like that.
Yeah.
If we get knocked out, gravity's going to take us, and we're going to fall hard. Yeah, it's sad.
They didn't actually show it, because there was a little bit of a tape delay. So, I mean, they didn't actually show him falling, thank God. It was only the people that were in the arena that had to witness it. So, you know. So you left in late 95. Any time before that or after, did you send out some feelers or?
Well, then I did some wrestling in the Oklahoma organization there, and I was director of fitness at Walmart before I came up here and became coaching at Dana and athletic director and stuff. So, I mean, I did a little bit of that, and I think I stepped down about 2000 completely from it.
So you pretty much washed your hands?
Yeah, it was, and I, you know, you get to a point you realize that it's time, you know, and I you know, and you just move on, you know. I mean, I could hang around forever like Hogan, but I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to come out wrestling and doing a tag team of my walker with somebody. But, you know, it comes time, you just move on and you get off your life and let the new kids on the block get in the show biz and get it going and see if they can't make some money and promote it and all that good stuff, you know. But I just felt about 2000, it was time.
Yeah, it seems, you know, in this business, guys overstay their welcome, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And do you take a little bit more pride in that you got out and were actually able to stay out and go into a totally different career?
Yeah, and here's the thing to look at, too. You watch the movie The Wrestler. I'm sure Mickey Rourke did a hell of a job playing that. That's what happens to guys when they stay in too long. Look at Flair. Okay, yeah, Flair was a big star. He made a lot of money, but he has no money now. He is broke. That's why he's doing what he's doing. He owes the government more than he makes. So, I mean, that's what happens to a guy when they stay in too long and they don't get out. I mean, that's you know, everybody has their time, and when it's time, you just need to, you're right, you need to do something else. Or while you're doing that, plan something else. So when you're time to get it, you know, the same thing happens to pro football. these guys, they don't put their money away when they're there. You know, then 5 years later after they're out of it, they're broke. And they didn't make any plans. I mean, that's what you got to do. It's got to be a means to an end, because nobody can do it forever, because your body can't last like that forever. I mean, you know, all the high spots you do, all the things you do, falling off the ropes, taking the chairs, your body can only take so much of that. Same thing just like football. And that's why you got to use it as a means to an end, not just a means, because eventually that means runs out, because your body can't last forever.
Very true. I'm very glad that you were smart enough to realize that. But backing up a little bit, to back when you were in the WCW, there was the big incident in Europe between Sid and Arn Anderson, the big stabbing incident.
I forgot all about that. I did see it. I just heard about it. I mean, I wasn't there when it happened, but I heard about it. You know, a lot of people talked about it and everything like that. He just lost his marbles, and poor Arn was just trying to protect himself and save his skin. You know, Sid's a good guy. I got along fine with Sid, but I know he could just go off the deep end sometimes. I don't know why. You know, he would just lose it, and I guess he just lost it in that Europe and just started taking out on poor Arn. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, so people were obviously more sympathetic to Arn in the whole incident.
Because he really didn't. I mean, I don't think he had much to do. He was just there. I think he just happened to be there, and Sid kind of went off the deep end. And then he was trying to, you know, he was just trying to protect himself.
Yeah, and I think Sid actually is the one that went to his room, so obviously he instigated like the second part that they, from, you know, the argument in the bar. He didn't have to go to his room, and that's really what caused the whole thing.
No, I mean, you know, and the guys, every once in a while you get an argument, well, let it go, fuck, go to your room and fucking, you know. But the next day you sober up, you wake up, you realize it was a bunch of shit, and you move on. But he didn't. He followed Arn to his room, and all Arn was doing was just trying to protect himself after that. But we had to get. They both had to go to the hospital at night.
Yeah, Arn was out for about 2 months after that.
Yeah, I mean it wasn't a very good. No, it wouldn't. No, it was something that you don't want to see ever happen. And yeah.
So while you were in WCW, were there any besides Hogan and DDP and Flair? Were there other guys that just pissed you off? That were just, you know, not fun to be around? And there had to be a lot of big egos.
There was, but there wasn't. I mean, everybody has a little bit of ego. I mean, we all do. Even I do. I mean, I can't say I don't. I mean, then I would be lying to you. But nobody really stood out. I mean, it was a overall pretty good group to go. Oh, well, Vader, of course. But Vader was full of himself, too. But otherwise, you take Vader out of it, okay? Overall, it was a good bunch of guys, and everybody worked well together. You take Vader, Flair, Hogan, and who's the other one you said? You said the other name. And DDP out of there. It was a good bunch of guys. It really was. And then there wasn't, I mean, everybody had a little beagle, but nothing like those guys. Of course, Paul Orndorff took care of Flair one night that straightened his ass out, too.
Well, tell us about that.
You know, one thing about old Van is he thinks he's pretty good, right? Well, one night he decided he thought he was pretty good. And old Paul, you know, Paul's a tough old fullback from those old days. And shit, he comes to kicking his ass. And hell, he broke his toe kicking him so hard because he didn't have no shoes on. He had a bunch of flip-flops on and kicked his ass so hard he about broke his poor toe. I said next time wear some shoes if you're gonna be kicking, buddy. He just started laughing, you know. But yeah, he deserved. I mean, Vader could be just a jerk to people, and you know, it's just like, why? Life's too short for that crap.
Yeah. Backtracking, I know in 1992 you wrestled in the GWF a little bit as Captain Ron.
Yeah, that was fun too. Down with those guys. Those were a good bunch of guys.
What kind of character was it? Because I don't think I've ever seen it.
Oh, it was just a big old pirate type character. I was down there with, gosh dang it, JB. He wasn't JB at the time, though. What was he? He was something different. You know, the guy that played, what's JB doing now?
You know, JBL?
Yeah, JBL. What's he doing now?
I think he's just, you know, doing the stock market thing and stuff like that. I haven't heard much from him lately.
So he's out of, he's stepping out too then from it, huh?
Oh, yeah. He's been out for like the, last couple of years and hadn't been doing anything.
He's a good guy.
His wife is like a really big financial advisor. She gets quoted on news shows all the time. I forget her
name. We were down there, in Texas, matter of fact, that's who picked me up. He and I were hanging. We were tag teaming together. I was Captain Ron. He was, I can't remember his damn big old Texas gimmick. Because he was an ex-ball player like me. And, yeah, at that time, him and his wife, he was just dating her. She was a good gal. I remember that, too. Yeah, great people. Great people. Dang it, I haven't seen him for a couple years. I was wondering how he's doing. JB's a good man. Good man. Good football player, too.
A lot of people from the Global, they said that there was a lot of people inside the company that were told that there was, like, some big money backers coming in. Did you ever hear that line? Did you hear about that?
We did, but we never saw the cash. Because, at that time I was there, JB was there, the two brothers that were tag team that went to WCW and I was there, and then one stayed for a long time, wrestled WWE. I don't know what he's doing now. I can't remember their names. We were all there together. We all heard. And we always heard that stuff, but we always kept wondering. That was the joke. We go down the road. Where in the hell is the cash? we heard that. We just never saw the loot.
What was it like wrestling in the Sportatorium? Because that was a pretty famous building.
Oh, that was cool. A lot of history there. A lot of history. A lot of great wrestlers. A lot of big shows. That was fun. That was kind of a cool place to wrestle. Those kind of things, those nostalgia things, that's part of wrestling I really enjoyed doing. Because those old buildings meant a lot to the sport and where they made money, where it all started, and all that stuff. So that was always cool. Just like doing the one up in Portland wrestling with Don Owens and Roddy Piper and all those guys. That was a lot of neat stuff too. Just because those things have been done for a long, long time and had a lot of history there.
Do you still follow wrestling at all, or MMA, or any combat sports?
I watched MMA, I'm sorry, and then we do watch the WWE because I got a 10 and an 8-year-old, and they both are into it, so I'll watch it with them and stuff, and it's all sex and candy now, and I tell you what, we didn't have those kind of girls when I was there. I can tell you that just Kimberly was the only one, but no, it's all showbiz, baby.
Is there anybody
A lot of walking and talking now, isn't it?
It really is. Is there anybody that you see nowadays that really you think could be big that, or even already are big that like you really like?
Well, I think Cena does a hell of a job. I think Cena could have worked in any era. He's a good talent. I think Triple H is too. He was there when WCW started, when I was there too, and he was a good young talent. You could see he was going to have some ability there. I think those two guys do a heck of a job. I think Orton, because he was brought up through his dad, does a hell of a job too. But he's from the old school, because his dad brought him up in the sport. So those people like that I respect.
Now, here we're getting near the end here, and we wanted to do a little word association, so we were just going to bring up a name. We just like you comment on that person, if you would.
Okay.
Vince McMahon.
Very, very intelligent when it comes to the business. Genius.
Eric Watts,
spoiled brat.
Bill Watts.
Just real fast, Contreras. Sorry. With Eric Watts, it seemed like his put after Bill left, which I think was before you even got there. He seemed to get his push taken away from him, and I have heard before that he did not handle that very well. Is that true?
No, he didn't. Very spoiled brat. That's why he never heard of him after that at all. I think he got completely out of the business after that. You never heard of him anywhere. At least I didn't. What's that?
All right, go ahead.
Shawn Michaels.
Very talented. Very athletic.
Rick Rude.
Great guy. Enjoyed the heck out of him. Good friend.
Pip Finley.
Fit Finley, one of the best talents that never got used right in the WWE. Very, very smart ring man.
Lord Steven Regal.
He's a character. He's a good guy. Has a true Brit, has a Brit sense of humor.
ECW.
ECW, the wrestling?
Yeah, the original company.
Oh, I like the original ECW that I do now, but now that been WWE, talent. That was great young talent. Great, a lot of future stars come out of there that you really enjoyed watching. Compared to what it is now, it's just a rerun of WWE.
The Harlem Heat.
I tell you what, good talent. Hard workers, did a nice job in the ring. I always enjoyed them.
Marcus Bagwell.
Pretty boy.
And one last one, Alex Wright.
Alex Wright. Very talented father. He never reached his full talent. Never. It lived off his dad's fame.
All right. I believe we're out of the word association. Is there anything you'd like to plug or anything like that? You can feel free to.
I just wish everybody the best, and I've enjoyed being with you guys talking tonight. You guys are good gentlemen, and I wish you the best in your shows.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much. I appreciate it.
You betcha. And thanks for letting me talk tonight. I enjoyed it.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, man.
All right. We have about 10 minutes of show left that I was planning on doing, at least. What a great guy. He was really funny.
Yeah, he was awesome. You know, some guys, you get on the line and they kind of seem like they don't really want to be there. You know what I mean? But he just rolled with the punches and started burying people. That's when he got good.
Yes, that's what you want to hear. You want to hear him rolling with the punches and just, making fun of DDP. So.
And when you don't have to ask a question where you're trying to get him to bury someone, it's even better. He just started burying people on his own. So.
Yeah, I'm trying to set it up for him to bury, Vader and guys like that. But, he did it, and it was definitely a good time. So next week we will return to what we were doing before. We'll probably have another guest in a couple of weeks. But next week I think we're going to do, from April until probably Doomsday when Hogan comes into WCW.
We ended on the last April pay-per-view, so we'll be starting from May.
So we may be able to
get through the whole summer,
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see about, Hogan winning the title with Shaquille O'Neal in his corner. So it'll be a good time. We might as well not just drag this out and stuff, because we're not going to do any of the 94, so.
That's good, because I got the Sons of Anarchy starts tonight, and I got to go watch it.
All right, excellent. All right, everybody, don't forget, go to superfriendsuniverse.com/PWF. We will be back here next week at our normal time, 8 o'clock, Central Standard Time, of course, and 9 Eastern. And we will be talking 1994 WCW. So thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you next week.